commuting needs and online at citybikes.coop, C-O-O-P. And by The Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW.
Good morning. Welcome to the KBO Bike Show. My name is Alon Robb and my co-host is Jocelyn Godey. Our engineer is Patsy Kohlberg, and good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
As all riders know, the benefits of cycling to one's body and soul and to the environment are many. Every first Wednesday of the month, we celebrate them on this show. Today, though, we will talk about a less happy aspect of cycling, the recent injuries and death of cyclists in our city. We will also discuss with our guests what we could do to make cycling safer for all. One bike injury is too much, and the last weeks have been bloody. Our hearts go out to the family of Mark Angeles, a recent Reed College graduate who was killed while riding on Southeast Cesar Chavez, 39th Avenue, and Gladstone, and to all the other injured cyclists, including Peter Anderson and Alistair Corkett. Get well soon. Also, Tori, a speedy recovery to you. Today we are joined by Jonathan Moss, writer, activist, and editor of the Bike Portland org site, Rob Sadowski, executive director of the Bicycle Transportation Alliance, Roger Geller, the city's bicycle program director, and Timur Ender, transportation policy advisor for Commissioner Novick's office. All have a wealth of experience and knowledge about cycling in general and how to make cycling widespread and safe. Good morning to you, Jonathan, Rob, Roger, and Timur. And thank you for being our guests today. The recent death and injuries of Portland cyclists have refocused attention on the dangers of cycling in Portland. Before we talk about the recent events and what could be done, what is the general state of cycling in Portland? And I know you could talk for hours about it, but maybe we could go quickly around. Are we indeed the bicycle mecca that people across the country describe? Maybe start with you, Jonathan.
I think right now in Portland, we're sort of in transition, maybe grappling with what it is to have formerly been, I think, you know, way ahead of every other American city in terms of cycling, and grappling with how do we maintain that place and what kind of big steps is it going to take to get there. You know, our numbers are relatively flat. Investment has not been at the same scale as it had been in previous years. You know, we've been on the website using the word stagnation quite a bit. Meanwhile, you know, people are moving here because they want to ride bikes, and the culture is as strong as ever. And I think we're sort of in a transition mode toward going from maybe good to great.
Okay, thank you, Jonathan. Roger Geller, director of the city's bicycle program. What's your perspective?
Thanks, Alon. That's a nice title. I think I'll stick with bicycle coordinator, okay. Which is my actual title.
Or dictator, or
yeah, something leader, like that. Czar, dictator,
visionary.
Yes.
Okay.
So I think that Portland is a good city in which to ride a bicycle. I think it is probably better than any other North American city of its size. That's not really the point. The point is, how good can we be? And Portland has tremendous potential to truly be one of the world's best cycling cities. And I think our challenge is to figure out how to unlock that potential. And I think we're always striving to do that.
Rob, executive director of the Bicycle Transportation Alliance.
What? I think we're facing a lot of different issues, and a lot of it is tied to affordable housing and access and where people are. We talk about where we're remaining flat in terms of ridership, but people are having to travel much, much farther this year than they had 5 years ago. And that's a really important thing. As our city starts grappling with change, movement, gentrification, allocation of resources. And allocation of resources is also key, because the reason we're stagnant and haven't had any major projects in the last few years is because we haven't had funding for those major projects. And until the city finds a way to raise fees, whether it's through a street fee, the state kicks in a transportation budget, which they have not renewed, or the federal government comes in with long-term transportation funding, we're going to continue to remain stagnant. And so that's a crisis that we all as a city need to resolve. And it's not just a crisis for bicycling, it's a crisis for walking, transit, as well as people driving cars, because nothing is getting done.
Okay, and Timur Ender, Transportation Policy Advisor for Commissioner Novick's office, your recent transplant to Portland, I understand. Mm-hmm. What is your perspective of the situation in Portland?
Sure, so I've been here for 2.5 years now, and I would say it's better than many of the East Coast cities that I'm from. I will say the quality of life is better, and that's part of the reason for that is because Portland has historically invested so much in walking and biking. Also, I think it's important to mention that your experience in biking in Portland is very heavily dependent on where you are, and we know there's areas in East Portland that haven't gotten that investment, and so we're looking to do what we can to make sure that the experience that someone in Southeast has inner Southeast is similar to someone who biking in East Portland as well.
How safe is it to be a cyclist in Portland? Is it a bicycle paradise, or is it a place where you risk your life every time you hop on a bicycle? Maybe we'll start with you, Timur.
Well, I ride every day from Lewis and Clark in that area. I take Terwilliger to downtown, and it's a beautiful route, and there's a bike lane the whole way. And so sometimes I have close calls, but in general, I love it and it's great. But I understand that not everyone may have that experience. And so we're looking at what we can do in all parts of the city to make sure we have a good experience for everyone. We're working closely with ODOT mm-hmm. to make improvements on Barber as well. So we're exploring all partners in the city and all areas of the city to make cycling safer.
Rob?
Cycling continues to remain a very safe activity. It's a safe recreational activity. It's a safe transportation activity. Unfortunately, we've had some major crashes in the last week. But in general, it's a rare thing when we have a fatality or a serious injury, and that's great. Not so much in the suburbs, and we're looking to improve things in the suburbs as well so that our riding experience throughout is great. I would say that we have concern about driving behavior in general. And it's not just, again, it's not just an issue for bicycling. It's certainly an issue for our friends who are walking and people who are driving cars, too, that are facing this. Together, we need to look at this as a traffic justice issue. And if we look at where serious crashes are and why they're occurring, there is a disproportionate impact on people of color. And that's something that we need to wake up to. And Timur was just mentioning new and revised investment in East Portland is key to that.
And you've mentioned traffic justice, and earlier you spoke about transportation and cycling being part of the general fabric of the city and society, and I'd like to expand on that later in the show because I think those are extremely important issues. Roger, how are you as a cyclist? Do you feel safe? Do you think it is safe for most cyclists?
Yeah, I agree that generally it's safe. It's, again, the idea that not as safe as it could be, right? It doesn't feel as comfortable as it could be. There are cities in the world where people are perfectly comfortable letting their young children ride independently about the city without a care in the world. And, you know, part of it is the type of infrastructure that's on the ground. You know, they've just created a very good system that makes it very safe. Part of it is just the understanding among the population as a whole that you need to look out for everybody that's out in the public right-of-way. I think there's a deeper sense of respect and appreciation that people who are driving are potentially operating things that are quite harmful to others. I have a 13-year-old daughter. I have a 16-year-old stepdaughter. They both get around the town independently by bike. So obviously, if I felt that it was dangerous, I'd feel very uncomfortable about that. And yet, that said, I still think about it when they're out riding around independently, because I know we're not as safe as we could be.
Jonathan, your own experience and that of your friends?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, each individual person. I mean, yes, my own experience, I come at it from, you know, my own history of cycling or whatever. So I think, and that's one issue that the city needs to really think about, is that people are coming to cycling from all sorts of different backgrounds. You have people who it's their first, second day on a bike. And unfortunately in America, we don't require any sort of testing or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, some people are out on the road on a bike, it's brand new, and they're facing these environments that are really not that great. And that's to your question. You know, unfortunately, in Portland, it's sort of a tale of two cities. There are some, for the most part, yes, I suppose, it's generally safe to get around. Again, I think safe for an American city, but it's pretty much of a joke if you look at sort of our European comparison. But at the same time, I don't know if there's really, you know, absent if you drive to the start of the Springwater Corridor and bike back and forth on that path. I don't know if there's really a place in Portland where you can get from A to B without at some point coming into some situation where you just, you know, you feel unsure or, you know, that something could potentially go wrong. I mean, then again, so, you know, it just takes too much caution, I think, to ride to some degree. And what's not reflected in a lot of the statistics and data is that, you know, there's a lot of people driving aggressively, and that's something that needs to be addressed as well. And just so, you know, the road environment is something that is a concern of mine.
And even on the corridor that you talked about, there are places where bikes have to stop, and it's not always the smoothest of rides.
Yeah, so a few shows ago, we had Leah Treat on to talk about Vision Zero, and I was really excited and glad to hear our mayor, Mayor Hales, now talking about Vision Zero in the press event yesterday. So what is the significance of that? What does that mean? How do we make improvements from here?
Well, so Vision Zero is just the concept of saying we're not going to tolerate fatality anymore. That we've reached a point in our traffic where that crashes themselves, we are not expected to be a part. Sorry, I'm going to start over. So what Vision Zero in a sense is we have come to a place in society where we think that just part of our driving culture and part of our street culture is that we can accept a certain number of crashes and a certain number of death. Vision Zero says, no, we're not going to tolerate that anymore. We've reached a point where we can make changes. And looking at European cities and now cities like New York that are putting all their forces into saying, how do we stop this? We're seeing crash reduction in really remarkable ways. Everything from speed reduction to trying to dive at what are the serious causes and why it's happening to major infrastructure changes that are changing the whole face of these cities. And that's what we want to see here. We want to say, we're not going to tolerate it anymore. We're going to take the same effort that the FAA has when there's a crash for an airplane and say, what happened? Why did it happen? And let's fix it so it never happens again. But that's a cultural change. It's a change in the way we drive, whether we're operating a car, bike, or walk. It's a change in the way that we prioritize money. It's a change in the way we prioritize engineering. It's not going to be something that happens overnight. It's going to be a huge cultural change within some of the bureaus and departments. And it's going to need to have a collaborative effort with folks like AAA, freight communities, walking communities. And that's what we as BTA and Oregon Walks are trying to do.
I'd like to get back to Vision Zero in greater detail soon, but if I could backtrack a little bit, what are the main causes of accidents and crashes in Portland? What do the studies show?
Well, I think it's important that we phrase it as crashes and not accidents, because as Rob said, accidents implies that it's inevitable, but crashes occur due to someone's negligence, whether that be a driver, a cyclist, or even the city. Something happens that causes that crash. And so I think the language we use is critically important. So can you rephrase what was the question?
Yeah, what are the causes, you know, what do the statistics tell us about causes of accidents, crashes?
Sure.
And also I would include in this maybe near crashes, mm-hmm. near accidents, because I am, you know, I've been in two bicycle accidents, which were not my fault, you know, a drunk driver and hazards on the road. And also, quite often, you know, people are opening their car doors, people are talking on the cell phone, text messaging. In all fairness, I should also quote what my daughter, who's a cyclist and also drives a bookmobile for the library, told me this morning. she also feels that some cyclists are responsible, you know, engaged in hazardous behavior. And but I think it's more maybe drivers. So what do we learn from studies and statistics?
Well, collisions happen because of negligence. So people not paying attention, being distracted, talking on the phone, violating some law, and that's what causes collisions. And so the safer infrastructure we have, the more money we have to build safer infrastructure, the more we'll be able to bring the number of collisions that occur down.
So, Alon, there's some, you know, to build on what Tamor said, mm-hmm. there's a report that Metro did a little while ago called the State of Safety Report, and it's a mm-hmm. safety plan that really should be adopted at the regional level and hopefully will be next in a couple of years. But they identify that, as Tamor said, alcohol or drugs were a factor in 57% of fatal crashes. Right. Speed of motor vehicles is a contributing factor in more than a quarter of serious crashes, and aggressive driving a factor in 40% of crashes. And so, you know, it's, you know, these kind of modifiable behaviors. And that's, I think, where we get to what Rob was talking a little about, the need for a cultural change, that it's these kind of, you know, sort of unthinking behaviors, and in some cases, uncaring behaviors that contribute to a significant proportion of the serious crashes.
So let me take an example of a street. If we take Barber, which was mentioned earlier, an example, we know that there are crashes occurring on Barber for all users. It's not the greatest place to be, no matter what kind of travel. But particularly if you're biking, it's very problematic. There are bridges that bike lanes end on. A Vision Zero policy, a new way of thinking would say, how do we protect people along that route so this crash doesn't occur? There's no rational person that would come out with a solution other than a protected bike lane on Barber. There has to be physical separation. And that physical separation is both good for bicyclists as well as the motorists, because they know that physical separation is going to exist. That's going to cost money, and it's going to cost a real political will in order to close out one lane of travel in each direction on Barber. That's a big ask that we're asking. The result of that will do two things. It will create safety. We will not have the kind of crashes, particularly serious and fatals, that we've had on Barber. And two, we'll get a lot more people biking, which is going to be good because that's going to be a lot less congestion in that area.
Right, Jonathan, can you add to this these statistics of where do most accidents happen? Are there certain areas of town, certain times of day?
I think one thing I can add is that, you know, a lot of the collisions that are happening aren't being reflected in any statistics, and that's one of the big problems, is that bicycle-involved collisions are woefully underreported. The DMV doesn't really care unless it's a certain threshold of damage. I think it's like, you know, $1,500 when the mm-hmm. state requires you to file a report. You know, people claim that when they reach out to the police bureau, let's say, to report a collision, if they're on a bicycle, they don't necessarily get the same level of respect that they might get if they were calling as someone who is in a car. So I just, whenever I hear about statistics, I think about all the near misses, all the collisions, all the damage to people's bicycles that is just simply not being captured or reported at all.
And if those were factored in, then the numbers would be pretty high, I assume.
Absolutely. If those were factored in, I think the whole conversation would be different. We'd be having a lot more funding, a lot more urgency even than we already have, because the first thing the city looks at when they think about putting in a potential new project or making an investment is, well, and same with the state, is what they look at is, well, how many collisions do we have at that intersection or on that street? Well, if a lot of these collisions aren't being reported, then that's not a real good way to make a decision.
That's a good point. So we spoke briefly about Barber and ways that the infrastructure plays a role here in preventing these accidents. Let's dig into that just a little bit deeper and be more specific about what role road design actually does play. How does that how can we affect mode users based on the way that they're interacting, getting around the city?
Well, I think it has a huge effect on people's decision making, and as well as safe outcomes. So we know from ongoing research, we know from our own experience, that creating a dedicated space for people to ride a bike in is safer all around for the roadway, as Rob mentioned. So even the humble bike lane. In fact, I was looking at a study recently that suggested that even having a 3-foot bike lane has an advantage. And the advantage is that if you're riding a bike down the road and you're to the right of that stripe, then you know that motorists can clearly understand that if they stay to the left of that stripe, you're not going to touch, right? Not saying that 3-foot bike lane is a good thing. I'm not saying it's particularly comfortable, but I'm saying that there's a study that indicates it has safety benefits. It also has safety benefits for other users of the road, because that motorist who's passing that bicyclist in that bike lane, they're much less likely to cross over a center line to give that person riding a bike wider berth. And that means that they are much less likely to have negative interactions, you know, crash with oncoming traffic. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the minimal standard. Once you create a protected bikeway, all of a sudden you're creating conditions that are supremely comfortable as well as safe. And what that level of comfort does is it encourages people to go out and ride a bike. So New York has been a leader in developing these kind of designs. I remember years ago riding through the heart of Manhattan, rush hour on a Friday evening, in a protected bikeway, having a very casual and comfortable conversation with a colleague who was riding right next to me. So that's what protected infrastructure does. It creates safer conditions. The research shows it, our experience shows it, and it encourages more people to get out and ride bikes.
Minnesota, which was just recently ranked one of the top 20 cities in the country, also has a very intricate Minneapolis has a very intricate set of trail systems. We don't have that in Portland, and the lack of that trail system, I think, really hurts us in terms of getting people in a really nice, comfortable way out there. Protected bike lanes are great, but when they hit the intersection, it has a big challenge. And the crashes that we've seen recently are intersection crashes. That means no protected bikeway would have prevented those crashes, unless there was dedicated signals to carry bicycles through at a different time than car traffic. And that's not, so what, some of those things that we've seen, advanced signals on Broadway, advanced signals in other areas of the city, are steps to do that. But if we're really going to make an effort on Vision Zero, we need to bring that to many intersections, if not all intersections, where there's bike facilities on.
And I think one thing we've learned from Sweden is engineering is critically important to having a safer city, and that's going to take millions and millions of dollars to re-engineer the kind of city that we want to see. And as we've seen, the state and federal funding has declined. I will say, due to Commissioner Novick and the mayor's leadership, we've seen more money invested in transportation this year since the 1980s. So PBOT received $28 million in funding for things like safe routes, youth bus pass, paving on 122nd, safety improvements on 122nd, which make it more likely that TriMet would increase bus service there, and a whole host of safety improvements, including high crash corridors.
You're listening to the Bike Show on KBOO Radio, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon on 90.7 FM and on the web. We're speaking with activist and editor Jonathan Moss, Rob Sadowski, executive director of the Bicycle Transportation Alliance, Roger Geller, head of the city's bicycle program, and Timur Ender, transportation policy advisor for Commissioner Novick's office, about the state of cycling in Portland, the recent death and injuries, and also how we could make cycling safer for all. Jonathan, you, in a recent article on Bike Portland, seem to have a little different view about the city's political leaders and their concern about cycling?
Yeah, well, what I've seen in the last few years, since 2013, when we had a new administration come in the mayor's office, I've seen Mayor Hales and Transportation Commissioner Novick really seem hesitant to embrace bicycling directly and really address sort of the elephant in the room, which is, you know, we're arguably America's number one bike-friendly city. A lot of this city, in terms of transportation and reputation, is built on cycling. People love cycling here. We have probably the most vibrant culture around cycling of any city in the world, in terms of sort of street culture. Yet we've had a political situation since January 2013 where bicycling is somehow a bad word. I mean, we had Mayor Hale's State of the City just recently. He didn't say the word bicycling once. To me, that's a problem, because in order to move forward on any issue, you need to create urgency, both politically and publicly. And if you have a city hall where people seem reticent to say the word bicycling and really embrace the issue and do something about it, and the situation being that no one on city council currently, including the mayor, currently rides a bike regularly around the city, so they lack a really key perspective. When you have that sort of absence of urgency, it's hard to do much. you know, and I think it's related to the fact that we're in a mode of stagnation.
Can I just Timur, respond? Yeah, of course. You'll respond, hopefully, at length in a second. Okay. But I just want to follow this with one short question, Jonathan. You mentioned no one rides a bike there, but is there also, if indeed that is the situation, is it also caused by a feeling that cyclists are not a political force, that the general mood in the city is anti-cycling? I mean, why would a politician not promote cycling?
That's a great question. Mm-hmm. I've asked myself that a lot. I think what there is a miscalculation at City Hall right now because of some unfortunate controversies around cycling during the previous administration. A lot of those caused by the administration themselves and by the city themselves. So there's this sense that when you bring up the word cycling or cycling issues, that certain special interest groups are going to get really mad, like downtown businesses and other business interests. And there's just, I'm sort of baffled that a politician wouldn't understand that if you frame it right and if you talk about it right and if you approach it in the right way, cycling is probably the strongest political issue in Portland.
Okay, Timur? Sure.
I would just highlight that Commissioner Novick does not shy away from bikes. He's mentioned this publicly numerous times, that we should thank people who bike for the benefits that they have on the air quality and the health. He said numerous times that people who bike decrease the health premiums for everyone because they contribute to a healthier city. He recognizes that bicycle infrastructure is the closest thing we have to an air and noise filter over our city, and we recognize that bicycles have a huge role to play in improving the economic and the environmental health of residents and the city of Portland. And I would also highlight, look, we're willing to try new things. Commissioner Novick's leadership earlier this last week with the NATO pilot project, we tried something out. We created almost a mile of public space in the heart of downtown Portland. We didn't know if that was going to be successful, and it worked out. And so we're willing to take risks. We're willing to try new things. We're acting with a sense of urgency, and we are dedicated to moving forward on bicycle infrastructure.
Rob, could you add to this?
I think there's a little truth in what both of the Jonathan and Timur are saying. I'll give you an example, Timur, of how we can sometimes see the other side. Portland Street Fee put out a video to help support street fees. They talked about all the transportation benefits that would be brought to the city of Portland. There was not a single bike shown in that video. Do you know how hard it is to spend 2 minutes with a camera in Portland and not see a bicycle? There was no way we couldn't have walked out of that with thinking that that wasn't intentional. So I just want to share that. That's a reality out there. And then, Jonathan, I'd say to you, I don't know what parties you're going to, but I go to parties where there's a lot of anger about bicycles all over the place. So the reality is, I think that exists. There is a real community and political reality that there's that tension out there. I think it's gotten less over the past few years. What I would say to the mayor and what I would say to Commissioner Novick as well, is what you're also missing, and I'm not disagreeing with anything that you say other than just that experience of they're underselling that anger, is that bicycling is such a part of the vital economic part of what Portland is successful. The way to sell Portland, the way to sell our health of our city, is to build on that and economic strength and build on what we're doing great instead of shying away from it. And that's not political. That doesn't take a lot of political leadership. That just takes smart sense, and we can do a lot better by embracing the things that we do great at.
And Roger, what is your impression? And I know you work for the city here, but you're beyond current administrators or past administrators, you're here forever. So what is your impression of the political will of city government?
I think Timur said it well, thank you.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Jocelyn, did you? Okay. We'll take a short break now. This is the KBO Bike Show. Today we're talking about the state of cycling in Portland, how to make cycling less hazardous. We have four guests who have done a lot, as much as anyone I know in the city, to help make cycling more fun, more available, more widespread, and more safe. So we'll take a brief break right now and continue in a minute. Mm-hmm. Good morning. This is the Bike Show on KBO Radio in Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM and on the web. My name is Alon Robb, and I'm joined by my co-host, Jocelyn Godie. And our guests today are four longtime riders and activists who have done as much as anyone in Portland to make cycling safe and an accepted part of our car-centered culture. They are Rob Sadowski, Executive Director of the Bicycle Transportation Alliance, Roger Geller, Head of the City's Bicycle Program, Timur Ender, Transportation Policy Advisor for Commissioner Novick's office, and Jonathan Moss, co-founder and editor of BikePortland.org. In the first half of the show, we focused on what is happening. There was some disagreement about the political will of our current leadership. In the second half of the show, I'd like us to talk more about what could be done, specific ideas, things that the city could do, the state. How do we make that cultural change that you, Rob, talked about? How do we create